everyone. Welcome back to Sit Still, Look Opinionated, a comedy and political satire podcast. I'm your host, Claire Malky. First off, I wanted to say thank you so much for listening each week. You all are the best. When people ask me what I was thankful for this year, instead of saying, you know, the usual, my house, my paycheck, my friends, blah, 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 I said my podcast listeners, because you all really do mean the world to me. Also, it is Spotify Wrapped season, so if we end up on your top five, definitely give us a share. And is it weird if your own podcast ends up on your top five list? I mean, I'm just asking for a friend, but it may or may not have happened to me. But if you want more than just the weekly Friday episode, consider signing up for our newsletter. In the newsletter, you have a sneak peek behind the scenes of the interview each week, as well as how we break down jokes and how we punch them up. It's really fun, and actually, I got a text message from my friend today saying how much she loved them, so you should definitely sign up for the newsletter. And also a huge, huge thank you to everyone who joined us on Patreon for Small Business Saturday. This show isn't possible without all of you, and we're really excited to have you as part of the Opinionated community. If you enjoy this podcast, consider joining us on Patreon, not only to meet more opinionated people, but also to let us connect with you. Speaking of connection, last week I connected with my roots and was back home in Virginia. Going to my parents always feels like stepping into a time capsule. Literally, nothing has changed in that house, and it is very calming for this anxious person. I also find our yearly traditions quite comforting. They're like if I only used a weighted blanket once a year. My mom and I always make a pie for Thanksgiving, and this year was no exception. 2020 was crazy enough, so we needed to, quote-unquote, return to normal in 2021. To surprise my mom, I wanted to set up all the pie ingredients and machinery before she woke up. You know, in an effort to still look like a perfect daughter. And, you know, at this point in the morning, I'm basically, if you merged a Stepford Wife with an idealized version of Taylor Swift. You know, nothing new. But I couldn't find any of the equipment. Panic ensued. Where were the cutting boards? They have been in the cabinet under the center island since 1998. What is this madness? Did my parents go on an episode of Tidying Up with Marie Kondo and not tell me? First of all, I am very offended they went on a Netflix show and didn't invite me. Don't they know I'm trying to build a following? But not long after I had ripped open every drawer in my kitchen, my mom waltzed down the stairs and saw me in a pure state of chaos. I blurted out, "Someone stole all the cutting boards!" To which at that point she told me, "No, I just moved them to make them more accessible." Even though my pride and ego were bruised, I'm really glad my mom stepped in just in time before I burned down the kitchen. Sometimes you just need a reminder that you don't know what you don't know. We have got a phenomenal show for you all today. We have the birth and postpartum doula, Lexa Glade, with us in the Sit Still studio. This interview was really unique, and I learned a lot about the human experience, so make sure you stick around for the rest of the episode. Today, I am drinking a peppermint mocha out of a holiday Starbucks mug. Mmm, delicious. Grab your drink, and let's get started. Up next, this week's headlines. A new strand of the coronavirus has emerged that has now been labeled Omicron. Part coronavirus, part Spider-Man villain. The trial for Ghislaine Maxwell is set to begin in the upcoming weeks. Her only objection is that she would prefer if the jurors were younger. The first female president of Sweden was re-elected after resigning within 7 hours of her initial election win. Sweden, a land of people who don't understand when a woman says no. Mississippi officials are looking for a man who escaped from a hospital while under police guard. He's a real Bear Heine Houdini. Twelve states are ready to enact immediate abortion bans should Roe v. Wade be overturned. It would be the inspiration for the new Broadway play, 12 Angry States. Dozens of bar patrons were stuck inside an England pub after a large blizzard. When warned of the approaching storm, all 61 married men responded, "Oh no!" Well, I'll have another. Kyle Rittenhouse's mom spoke out, saying her son's life has been turned upside down from bullying.
"Aww, did you send your little mom after you got away with murder? Aww, everyone wants to hold me accountable. You gonna cry some more about it, you little bitch?"
A new method for testing lead levels in water is revealing more accurate and higher results. Yeesh, that's heavy. The Supreme Court is being asked to review the case that freed Bill Cosby. Justices Clarence Thomas and Brett Kavanaugh are already making the jello pudding. NASA is sending a probe to test whether it can redirect an asteroid. NASA is sending a probe to test whether it can redirect an asteroid. Asteroid. This is some serious highbrow humor, folks. Chris Cuomo repeatedly helped Governor Andrew Cuomo cover up his many scandals. But he's not guilty or anything, he's just Italian. Biden called the Omicron variant a cause for concern, not a cause for panic. To show solidarity, Brendan Urie has changed his band's name to Concern at the Disco. In efforts to be transparent, Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey tweeted a screenshot of his resignation letter. In efforts to be more realistic, the new CEO is renaming the company to Angry Birds. Theranos founder Elizabeth Holmes accused her ex-boyfriend and ex-business partner of abuse. Looks like they've got some bad blood. A judge proclaimed gobbledygook when a man convicted from the Capitol riots claimed he had a divine right to be there. Turns out the judge was just a turkey in a robe. Gobble, 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 gobble. There's a labor shortage of Santas this year due to the ongoing pandemic. Which makes sense, because Santas are usually old, fat, and white. And that was this week's headlines. Back by popular vote, it's Meredith White and her simple guide to getting elected to Republican Congress.
Oh, hello there, God-loving, meat-eating Americans. I'm Meredith White. Ever looked around your itty-bitty town and thought, golly, there's one too many shit-eating Democrats around these parts. Maybe I should just do it myself? Well, then you've come to the right place.
She's got all the right things to say.
I took Meredith's advice and found very far-out facts about baby-killing laws. Did you know abortion clinics find voodoo priests who perform the operation and then make witch babies?
You're welcome, sugar.
She's read books.
Don't you want to live in a time when you're appreciated for exactly the gender you are? You want to party like it's 1899.
I finally realized, what woman needs a checking account in her own name when I have the self-respect of a 1950s housewife? Turns out getting elected was just as simple as throwing Gloria Steinem under the bus. Thanks, Meredith.
Just God doing his good work, honeycakes.
She puts the U in USA.
Change is all well and good, but at what cost? Change won't make things better if it means you get less, right?
I was worrying about minorities and our children's future so much I got frown lines. Now I drink cocaine bourbon with the good old boys from the alt-right. And I'm as happy as a white clam. Thanks, Meredith.
No one knows how to make it to the top and stay there like Meredith White.
Just have fun. That's what politics is all about. Pick out the best tie for that new spray tan and kick up your imported alligator heels, darling.
Buy Meredith's White Guide to Getting Elected to Republican Congress. We have almost 3 representatives standing by to take your order. This past June was the 157th anniversary of the Gettysburg Address, that famous speech that Abraham Lincoln gave towards the conclusion of the Civil War. Here to give us that famous speech is our resident historian, Monica Payne. Monica!
67 years ago.
Oh, okay, so you're just going to go right into it. Okay, that's fine.
Our forefathers who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name.
Oh, wait, Monica, I think that's not how it goes.
You know, you're right. This happened in 1864, which is way more than 4 and 7 years ago.
Oh, no. I meant that you were doing the wrong speech.
Our fathers brought forth upon this continent a new nation conceived by liberty.
Wait, isn't it conceived in liberty?
Oh, semantics. All you need to know is some liberty chick got fucked by justice and now she's knocked up.
Oh, wait, no, that's not what I meant.
That all men are created equal. Mankind. That word should have new meaning for us today.
That sounds a little too modern to have been in the Gettysburg Address.
Now we are engaged in a great civil war, testing whether that nation, or any nation so conceived and so dedicated, can long endure. And you will be launching the largest aerial battle in this history of mankind.
Wait. There were not airplanes in 1864.
We can't be consumed by our petty differences anymore. We will be united in our common interest.
Oh, okay. So this is just, you know, going its own direction.
We will not go quietly into the night.
Oh, okay. So now you're just quoting Independence Day.
Sons of Gondor, of Rohan, my brothers.
Oh my God, seriously?
I see in your eyes the same fear that would take the very heart of me.
We are so far from Abraham Lincoln.
That we here highly resolve that these dead shall not have died in vain, that this nation, under God, shall have a new birth of freedom.
Well, I gotta say, Monica, it's like I'm hearing this for the very first time.
Thanks. Yeah, Abe really helped me out with this.
Abe? As in Abraham Lincoln?
Yeah, he's in my car.
Wait, what are you saying?
I fight and you may die.
Oh, Jesus.
Just one chance to come back here and tell our enemies that you may take our lives, but you'll never take our freedom!
I've never been so confused, but also incredibly inspired at the same time. Our resident historian, Monica Payne, everyone.
Great news, everyone. We have new staff writers this season. We were able to hire such amazing team members thanks to our patrons on Patreon. Thank you so much to Jamie, Ashlyn, Christina, Anthony, Laura, Andy, Anna, and Samantha. For more information, visit us at patreon.com/sitstillpodcast. Hope to add your name next week.
Up next, my interview with Lexa Glade. For today's interview, we have Lexa Glade. She is a birth and postpartum doula and interior designer who lives and practices in Chicago. She's an advocate for holistic, full-spectrum health care inclusion of mind, body, culture, and tradition. Lexa, thank you so much for being on Sit Still, Look Opinionated. I'm very excited to chat with you today.
Awesome. Likewise.
So even though I, you know, gave a little bit about who you are, could you talk a little bit about your background and who you are?
Yeah, of course. I'm kind of a jack of all trades. Mm-hmm. I went to University of Chicago and studied English language literature, psychology, and visual art. So I have a background as an artist. I was a practicing artist for many years before I joined the design community, first through auctions and then through interior design. And now I'm practicing as a doula, which I love because it kind of combines all of these different interests and skill sets that I have holistically, kind of in one place, and I can offer it all together, which is super fulfilling.
That jack of all trades hats, it's like you're always trying to figure out exactly what's the right direction to go into. For our listeners who are unfamiliar, what is a doula? Like what does it encompass? And we're going to go into this much more in depth throughout the interview, but just to kind of get us started.
Yeah, of course. I wish there were doulas for like every major life transition. Mm-hmm. Basically, and there are for death. There are death doulas, there are birth doulas, postpartum doulas, there are abortion doulas. Basically, a doula is a companion, first and foremost, that assists primarily women, though we now use terms like birthing person to be more inclusive. Mm-hmm. As well, but primarily women, to advocate for herself and her family in a healthcare setting. So this most commonly happens in birth, mm-hmm. but it can also happen in a variety of other settings. So we also act as sort of informants so that we can assist our clients with making better decisions. We don't make decisions for our clients. We do not speak for our clients. We are purely there to help them become as self-determined as possible. Mm-hmm. So we're a resource to them. And we kind of do everything that's required to support them to be their best selves in these kind of transitionary or what else do you say? Transitionary or, you know, major life changing events. Mm-hmm. And it's really cool. It's awesome.
Hearing it as a companion, that's a really great like visual for me, someone who's maybe not like the most well-versed. How did you, you know, quote unquote, discover doula work? What drew you to this profession?
I've always been a big advocate for sex positivity. Mm-hmm. I'm queer, so very much like connected with the LGBTQIA+ community. Mm-hmm. And I, like I said, kind of earlier, I was jack of all trades. I had all these skills. You know, I'm wonderful at cooking and cleaning and home organization and designing and trying to solve problems and getting information, research. And I was like, how do I bring this part of myself to a place where it will better help women, better help the community, better help, like in my mind, like the world. Mm-hmm. You know, I'd worked in a corporate environment for what feels like far too long now. It was kind of a frustrating place to be. I'm not very much in, you know, the corporate military industrial complex, this whole thing. Mm-hmm. I'm just not really on board. I feel like there's a better solution. I don't know. I'm kind of like getting really meta with this, really philosophical.
Yeah.
I was like, how do I take myself and plug it into this system that we have and really like try to ignite change? And so I saw doula work, birth work, you know, being a great place to do that, because birth is sort of like ground zero for humanity.
Yeah.
It's where we perpetuate ourselves, our culture, our traditions. So what better place to work other than birth? You know, I mean, I felt like I could make the biggest change. You know, I'd been like thinking about it for years. It was like this problem. I was always trying to solve this problem. Like, what would be a good fit for me, and how could I have impact? How could I have the most impact? How could I make it myself the most efficient. Mm-hmm. And that's how I came into doula work.
Yeah. The corporate settings are, they're grinding, and it's like, it feels like there's no room for creativity in my experience, at least. You mentioned culture and tradition in part of your answer there as well. Could you sort of talk a little bit more about what that means for you in your practice?
Yeah, of course. So one thing about being a birth worker, specifically a doula, is, you know, we're trained ethically to act the most unbiased way as possible, to create safe space for our clients so that they can ask themselves the tough questions they wouldn't be able to, you know, really dig deep and figure out what works best for them, how they want to move forward, what kind of person they want to be. And part of that being unbiased requires us to set our own selves kind of aside and really honor the person that we're working mm-hmm. with. And that is like a full spectrum affair, right? So their psychology, their likes, their dislikes, their, you know, their skin color, their culture, their traditions, like what makes them. It's like our job to like hold safe space so that they can fully hold that and, you know, run with it,
mm-hmm.
be their best selves kind of a thing. And seek answers, ask questions, seek answers, get the answers and the information they need, then to make decisions and to move forward, you know, take action.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why like being full spectrum is so important to me, because I feel like that is what our healthcare system is sort of like lacking right now, you know, is that ability to look at the whole person as opposed to just like statistics, you know,
mm-hmm.
Which, you know, statistics or data is amazing, right? Data gives us a fabulous tool.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't necessarily plug somebody into an average.
Yeah.
Averages are actually one of the worst. Or like not worse, but like the least meaningful statistics. I mean, I can talk about data all night. Like medians are often like much better, but like
mm-hmm.
an average is not like a good place for someone to, you know, come, like it's not a good place to start when you're trying to treat someone, work with someone,
mm-hmm.
Help them plan for the future and take care of themselves and their health.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned healthcare, and what sort of separates a doula from the other parts of healthcare, like a nurse or like a healthcare provider?
Actually, I like to think about it the other way around. So yeah. It's more like a doula is a thing that like sews it all together.
Uh-huh.
So we're like the person that's there between every visit and between every healthcare professional that may be assisting with birth. Which could run the gamut of nurse, midwife, doctor, surgeon, anesthesia. I mean, the list is really long, mm-hmm. right? But we're always there. So we're never going to leave our client. We're always on call for them for the most part. And we really encourage them to use that to their advantage.
Mm-hmm.
So part of our job too is like we can mediate between healthcare professionals and encourage our clients to ask the right questions. And sort of like help them run long for themselves. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Like bridge those gaps. We're like bridging the gap between one professional to the next and like one visit to the next and like helping our client just sort of like keep that continuity of care. Which I think is incredibly important.
Mm-hmm. You were mentioning sort of, yeah, that companionship aspect, like being there and being a part of it with them. And yeah, I can imagine how effective and important that would be for someone in all stages of life, as you were mentioning. What's your favorite part about being a doula?
I think it's like asking questions.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something that like I've really had to practice like extensively as a doula, and it's now become like a life ethic. But my favorite thing about being a doula is like when you're with someone, like not making commentary, just like listening, really taking it in and thinking about what the best question is that will help them get to the next place they're trying to go without judgment. You know, like, I'm never going to judge somebody for deciding to have a scheduled C-section. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, maybe through like their decision-making process, and they've looked at all the benefits and the risks and the alternatives, and they've listened to their gut and they've said, this is what I want to do, then like, that's fine.
Yeah.
You know, so that's kind of where a doula is different from a friend, mm-hmm. kind of in that, like, we are truly an unbiased companion.
Mm-hmm.
And our job is to like, just hold the client, you know, hold that space for them to decide,
yeah.
make decisions. And,
that's actually
the questioning thing. The questioning thing for me is like, also the most interesting, because like, just with my background and my training, mm-hmm. you know, through school, you know, my undergraduate degree, and like, I also have part of a master's in data science, which is super cool, from the University of Chicago. You know, like, this is my whole life. My whole life, I can remember going back to age 16
mm-hmm.
and like, reading Nietzsche for the first time. And just, I just always want to be questing and asking those questions. And I think often in the wrong context, I can come across as like a devil's advocate. You know, it sometimes rubs people the wrong way. But as a doula, asking those questions, it is the best thing you can possibly do. And not a single person is going to hate you for it. They're always going to say thank you.
Mm-hmm.
It's so impactful. There's a place for that there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like this piece of myself that I've been able to sort of plug into this role and really just have sparks fly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I can imagine too, that maybe you're asking some of those like tougher questions that maybe you need to be asked or need to be uncovered for, you know, the betterment of society, to, you know, draw that out.
yeah, totally. I mean, there's no better place than to ask a difficult question than in birth.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of weird, but like, that is the most raw human experience, I feel like, other than like death, that like someone can possibly have. And like, what a better time to start asking those questions.
Mm-hmm. That was interesting that you brought up a scheduled C-section, because that's actually how I was born, which is kind of funny. But yeah, because Mike, you don't have to put this in the interview. We don't have to talk about how I was born, but
please share your birth story.
Well, it's so funny. Well, because I remember, my mom, like, so my birthday is at the end of June, and I always like was like, oh, that was like the day I was, you know, just born. And my mom was like, oh yeah, I picture your birthday, because, you know, it was like she was telling it to me as if she had just scheduled a dentist appointment. She was like, oh yeah, you know, this was the time and this was the place. And I was like, oh my gosh, what? But yeah, apparently I was like this way instead of this way. So yeah.
Yeah, you were that's what we call a transverse lateral, which is the only, actually, just so you know, it's the only position that you cannot birth naturally in. So C-section is the only way. And so, I mean, if someone's coming into that, obviously they're going to have a scheduled C-section, and that's okay. That's still birth.
Yeah.
You know, it's still birth. So
it's so funny. My mom always talks about that. And I'm just like, yeah, it's like, oh yeah, you know, I just went to the doctor and then I came home with a baby. And I was like, okay, mom, it's wild.
Birth is wild.
I mean, some of the stories Nativa would tell me, I was like, oh my goodness. There are so many, so wild.
yeah, there's like an adrenaline rush. I mean, that's another thing about my background, why I became a doula. It's mm-hmm. like, you know, I'm divorced. My ex-husband was a Navy SEAL. Mm-hmm. So that marriage was like very adrenaline rush. Like, I found myself doing incredibly weird things at weird times of the day. You know, he had really bad PTSD.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I became trauma informed, was like just trying to figure out how to better support him. And I did a bunch of training there. But I really loved that, like, adrenaline rush of supporting someone in a crisis, mm-hmm. which obviously didn't work out for my marriage, but I look back on it, you know, afterward, and I said, you know what, I think I could turn that energy into something better again. So it was like taking all of this energy that I had that was just misaligned and like channeling it into a job that just could like fire all my pistons.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there are crazy stories. birth is insanely amazing. Mm-hmm. It's super cool.
What was it like when you realized you could take that skill you had and make it into a job? What was that feeling like?
It's so empowering. Mm-hmm. And the awesome thing is like, it's a full circle, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I feel empowered and now I'm empowering others to be empowered. And there's this like beautiful circle that's just feeding itself in this amazingly like positive way. It's balanced. It feels great. Mm-hmm. I love it.
That's such a lovely sentiment. And yeah, that empowerment inspires empowerment. Sort of switching gears in a sense. I feel like in the United States, at least, there is a lot of controversy about who can be born and, you know, a parent's right to give birth. What are some of your thoughts on why it's important to understand, advocating for your own health, and if we want to touch on like your thoughts on some of like Texas's abortion laws and things like that. I would love to hear from your professional point of view how you handle conversations like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of funny that I was invited onto a podcast call to still look at right? Because as a doula, you know, I'm sort of not supposed to have a hard, fast opinion. I'm supposed to like help other people work through theirs. Mm-hmm. And so that way, you know, obviously I've been thinking about this abortion legislation. Mm-hmm. And I kind of go to that like devil's advocate place where I'm trying to look at all sides of it, hold it and roll it around and say, okay, on one hand, you know, I see the viewpoint of pro-life. You know, if that's your religious belief, then, you know, great. Then, but I always come back to this place where it's like, okay, our government, our constitution, everything, we are founded on the separation of church and state. Mm-hmm. So what does this say for us as a country? Number one, it's a little schizophrenic, if I might use that term mm-hmm. loosely. You know, and it kind of is like, okay, so if you have legislation that's like enforcing one viewpoint on a whole other population of people that may not share that viewpoint, that's not freedom either. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, I support freedom of choice. Like, if you are pro-life, that's fine, you know, but you can't put that opinion on someone else, have it become a law, and then also have people be punished. Mm-hmm. The whole punishment angle of it, to me, is a little, makes me uneasy. It makes me queasy. Like, why are we making women feel even more ashamed of their bodies and their situation? You know, I mean, it's, if you look at the history of like being female mm-hmm. or any other alternative sexuality, you know, I mean, it's cloaked in shame, mm-hmm. you know? So why are we going back to this like middle age kind of draconian idea of shaming people for the choices they make about their body? And also, why is it okay that things like plastic surgery are still totally fine? Like, you can modify your body. That's legal. That's not. Or what about people who like, you know, do IVF and they have embryos and they decide to use one or two embryos, but they like, I have five more and I'm just going to throw them in the trash. Mm-hmm. I mean, those are full blown like fetuses almost, you know, I mean, and that's okay. That's legal. So like, there's a whole logical thing there that's broken too. Like, I mean, I just look at it purely logically where I'm like kind of trying to balance it like a judge a little bit, you know? And I just, there's definitely something that's off there. There's like, you know, logic is not being upheld for sure. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, if you were to go pure reason, no, it's definitely a very reactive legislation, which is dangerous mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. to me. I mean, feels dangerous.
Yeah. And you do bring up some things that it's sort of, yeah, like poking the holes in the argument. Yeah. It's like, we have the freedom to, you know, change our face, change our eyebrows. But, you know, and then I also sometimes through the argument of like what happens after that child is born, like what are the programs in place, things like that. You know, we could.
Yeah, exactly. Like if you force someone to then have a child they didn't want to, mm-hmm. are you then going to help them take care of that child? And then obviously, like we rank like the lowest of all like developed countries mm-hmm. in terms of like supporting families and children. So I'm just like, something logically is not working here. So then I have to go back to this place where I'm like, well, this seems like a very emotional react of legislation that may not actually be to the benefit of anyone except those who are making it.
Mm-hmm.
Which now we're getting this whole power dynamic. I mean, like I could go on, you know, it's a chain reaction, mm-hmm. right? Yeah, it's difficult. It's difficult as a woman too, you know, taking my doula hat off and putting aside and just being a woman
yeah.
here. It's difficult for me to see things like, you know, same-sex marriage be legal, yet Roe versus Wade is still not decided.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, like, it's been almost 50 plus years.
Yeah.
I mean, we're like half a century and no one can seem to make a decision. Yet women are like 50% of the population. So it, again, there's just something there that's like, what?
Mm-hmm.
When then why are people making decisions for us as women?
Yeah.
Too? If we truly are 50% of the population, like, I mean, that must mean then, like, I mean, I guess I'm kind of getting off the tangent, but that must mean that like, there's a whole faction of women that, you know, also don't support, which is fine too. So it's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. And when the religion plays into it, and I think that about that a lot too, it's like, if you don't personally want it, in my opinion, if you don't ever want that, then that's fine. But yeah, why is it then your belief on everyone? It's very, yeah, it's very complex. And yeah, thanks for sharing some of your thoughts on it. I also wanted to ask a little bit more about, you know, Even if like a person isn't necessarily getting pregnant at any time soon, how should reproductive like, do you have any thoughts on like reproductive health, like even if you're not trying to get pregnant?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's like stay informed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I stay informed. Don't take one opinion as de facto as the answer, because there is not going to be one answer, even in a medical situation. But I think the thing is, like, we live in this society where we look at medical professionals, we just take their word as law, and they're still humans. They, you know, they have training that can help you make better medical decisions, but like ultimately they're not, you shouldn't be in a doctor's office and think like the doctor's word is law, so I have no other choice. That's absolutely not true. You have so much choice. You have so much choice. There's so many options. You just have to raise your hand and ask. You know, I mean, and that's the thing where we're like, I think a lot of people kind of freeze up and they're like, oh my God. You know,
mm-hmm.
I don't have children. I'm currently not planning on having children. I have an IUD,
mm-hmm.
you know, but like I went out and I like did a ton of research, you know, and I just really want people to feel like they're capable of making decisions for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my job, is to help people make better decisions for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And
it goes for all reproductive health. I mean, whether it's like making the decision not to have kids,
mm-hmm.
like looking at all the reasons why and being comfortable with that and saying like, this is not the right decision for me for myriad of reasons, and that's fine.
Yeah,
that's great. That's me, you know.
Mm-hmm. And if we're putting, you know, that proverbial like women hat back on, there's all this pressure, at least from in my experience.
Oh, yeah.
You know, oh yeah, when you're having kids, like it's like, okay, or I can just live. Like no one's asking our male counterparts when they're having kids. And yeah,
I mean, well, unless, you know, some, like, they do too, yeah, right? But I mean, I feel you, like as a woman, for sure, there's this reproductive pressure, which makes advocating for oneself even more difficult. And there's a history of passivity, you know, women are better seen and not heard. And like, we are still jumping over those hurdles,
mm-hmm.
you know, I mean, we're still climbing up that mountain. It's, you know, we're still that generational, you know, tradition, it does carry over and it keeps going, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's up to us to make better decisions about like how we act, how we speak, how we interact with one another, so that our children don't continue to carry the same, these ideas, which are not inherently bad, but in certain contexts can be toxic,
mm-hmm.
right? I hear, you know, toxic masculinity a lot. It's like thrown around. Mm-hmm. And like, yes, masculinity in itself is not toxic, but under certain conditions and in a certain context and certain stereotype and all this, it can become toxic. So like, just understanding that things are complex,
mm-hmm.
trying not to be reactive towards others, kind of always taking the back seat and taking that 5 seconds to be like, let me pause, let me think, let me go through. You know, as a doula, we're trained with this acronym mm-hmm. called BRAIN. But I think this is a great thing that everyone can benefit from. We use it when making decisions like in the labor and delivery realm really quickly. And I mentioned it earlier on in the interview, but it's BRAIN stands for what are the benefits, what are the risks, what are the alternatives, what is my intuition or my gut telling me? And then the N stands for like not enough time or like how much time do I have to make the decision?
Mm-hmm.
And like taking the time just to like sit with that acronym whenever you're thinking about almost anything. I find myself thinking about it when I'm like, should I turn left or right here? I mean, it's crazy sometimes. They're like, what should I do? Like, should I go for a run right now? Like it's constant, but like just thinking about that, like, in healthcare settings of any kind can help you make better decisions.
Mm-hmm. That's a great acronym. Yeah. And I could really see that, how that could, just benefit so many situations where it's just, yeah, like taking, you know, considering what's around you. If our listeners wanted to learn a little bit more about doula work or, you know, more research about being a doula, where would you direct them?
Penny Simpkin,
mm-hmm.
she's like the mother of all doulas. My certifying organization is DONA, and she's like one of the founding members. So I'm like maybe a little biased mm-hmm. there, but like DONA International is a great resource. CAPA is the other huge organization, CAPPA, that's the American organization. The Birth Partner is a great book. Ida May is a great place to start. She's an author, kind of like groundbreaking birth worker.
Mm-hmm.
There's also Pamela Englund's Birthing from Within, which is another, you know, early birth worker text. But yeah, those are some places. Go talk to a doula. I mean, if you go to CAPA's website or DONA's website, you can see a list of doulas that are active in your area. You can call them and talk to them. And like, honestly, like that's probably the best place to start is go have a conversation with a doula.
Mm-hmm.
We're community workers. And so like, you know, we hold ourselves and we're proud of being sort of like alternatives to Googling something or like going on WebMD. You know, we try to get our information from a wide variety of sources, evidence-based, you know, we look at the data, we read the journal articles. Yeah, go talk to a doula.
Yeah.
There are plenty of them in your community. I can guarantee it. They're just, you know, we're sort of like wallflowers.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Yeah. It's like, yeah, if you want to really know something, yeah, go have a conversation with someone. We totally advocate for that here on the podcast too. Well, Lexa, this has been an awesome interview. Thank you so much for your time. We do have one signature question. And it is, what is something you are opinionated about? And it can be about literally anything.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of mentioned it earlier, but so taking my doula hat off and having an opinion.
Yes.
you know, I think my biggest like point of friction right now is this like corporate sort of oligarchy, I think, that America has.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow evolved into. And you know, I think that you mentioned it, you know, limits creativity. I think it limits freedom. I think it's like detrimental to mental and physical health. You know, we don't have the system set up to support individuals to be healthy and make the right decisions. That's one reason my job even exists, mm-hmm. you know, is a failure of the system to support people in this country, whether it's through childcare or affordable health care or a decent wage or housing prices. You know, I mean, there's definitely like a slow fail happening right now. And I think that sort of like the government handing the keys over to corporate minds and funding, and it's not helping the individual.
Mm-mm.
For sure. It's super evident now. I mean, like you can't deny that now.
Yeah.
I think there was a time maybe like 10 years ago where like I was still mulling this over and we're all kind of like coasting. It was like the early aughts, late 90s, things were cool. Now it's like, yeah, you know, I can't afford health insurance. Hopefully nothing happens to me. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, that's kind of what it, you know, and I know that it's a problem because, you know, I'm Finnish American descent.
Yeah.
So I have a lot of family in Finland and we share stories, and I can tell you people in Europe are like appalled. They don't even understand.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Pretty opinionated about it. I hope that my work kind of helps provide an alternative,
mm-hmm.
Or at least starts a conversation about an alternative.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't need to be this way.
Yeah,
for sure.
And the thing was, like, the healthcare is like the golden handcuffs in a sense, because it's like, you know, I work in a corporate environment and I am no longer of an age where I can have my parents' health insurance. And so it's like, okay, that's what keeps me there, honestly. And it's,
I
don't really enjoy it. And it's not, I get no, you know, fulfillment out of it. So yeah, it really is. But, you know, there was no other options when I needed to work from home and all these things.
Hey, I was there. You know, I very recently quit my full-time corporate job mm-hmm. this year.
Congrats.
It was a terrifying, yeah, thank you. I mean, it's still terrifying. I still feel like I'm falling off of a cliff, but, you know, it was terrifying. It was like, I've got healthcare. I'm like legally blind. So I had vision care, mm-hmm. you know, I have corrective lenses, dental care, a good income that was like, you know, every 2 weeks I knew it was coming down the pipeline. And it paid well. I was saving money.
Mm-hmm.
But miserable.
Yeah.
You know, completely miserable. Working from home, you know, back and neck issues, long hours. You know, it felt awful. Isolated. You're kind of always afraid. That's the thing. Like corporate, you're describing it. Like you're like, I don't want to leave my job because like, what if I don't have health insurance? And that was what corporate culture like milks is fear.
Yeah.
I mean, that's exactly, that's why people stay is fear. I talk to any one of my friends who have children or not. And like, they're just like, I wish I could quit my job, but I'm too afraid.
Mm-hmm.
Any kind of culture that runs on another person's fear is toxic.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can't support it. And that's why I quit. I was like, I'm not judging anyone who has a corporate job at all.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, not at all, because I totally get it. I've been there.
Yeah.
But I just, everyone, it was like, you know, it was like, what, Office Space or whatever. Like one day you just wake up and you go like bash you throw the printer out the window.
Yeah.
And beat it up and like, just, you know, with a baseball bat. That was me. I was like, I can't sit here and watch families, women, people suffer anymore. And I will not participate in that machine,
mm-hmm.
in that system. So it's like kind of raising your hand and saying like, you know what, this system is, you know, fucked. Pardon my friend.
No, totally fine.
I'm going to leave.
Yeah.
I'm going to leave and maybe like try to like, it does feel a little bit like a revolution,
mm-hmm.
you know, but it feels like a positive one. I'm not acting in a violent way.
Mm-hmm.
That was the thing too. I watched, you know, I'm in Chicago. I watched the riots happen here. I watched parts of the downtown area burn. Mm-hmm. I was working downtown at that time. I was physically there. I saw it.
Wow.
Traumatizing. I mean, I've seen a lot of shit in my life, but it was tough.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I was forcing myself to work through it. Because again, we're afraid of losing my job. working through COVID, as a designer at that time, like I had to, I don't want this to become a therapy session, but, you know, I had to go out and work.
Yeah.
And very early on, I never stopped working. I went out and worked. Mm-hmm. And I did get to work from home occasionally, but my job still relied on me being on site. And so I was working with like huge union crews, people working in downtown buildings. And it was, you know, I was terrified. You didn't know what to think. You're like, oh, COVID, am I going to get sick? People are getting sick around me. Then the riots happened and all this stuff. And, you know, a lot of people got up and they're like, I want to go protest. I'm going to go do this. And I want to donate money and all this stuff. And I still sat there with myself. And I was like, I'm not ready to make a decision. I don't know what to do. This feels wrong. Mm-hmm. And then months later, I was like, I'm going to become a doula.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is what I feel this situation demands,
mm-hmm.
is an unbiased advocate, someone who can help other people, like, find themselves, like, figure things out without the pressure of social stigmas, maybe toxic people in their lives, mm-hmm. any other, maybe non, whatever, what other influences, maybe friendly influences,
yeah.
but they're like, I don't need your advice. Thank you. Please go away. You know, whatever. It's just like, how do we navigate the way forward? And I was just like, wow, this role as a doula, as a birth worker, it just seemed like the
mm-hmm.
solution to this. This thing, people are so angry. It came out of a place of anger and frustration.
Mm-hmm.
But like, instead of me being like, I'm going to go out in the streets, you know, I was like, I'm going to sit for a while and think about it. I'll make a decision in a few months. And then that's what I did.
Amazing. I love that. Thanks for sharing your story about, you know, that experience as well. Like that must have been very traumatizing. And at like, you know, I mean, we all, you know, anyone who's listening to this podcast lived through the last 18 months or 20 months or 2 years, whatever, how long. And, you know, can, you know that feeling of fear of having to like, oh my gosh, am I going to get sick and die? So that's very, you know, I feel for you for having to go out and do work at that time. That must have been tough. Yeah.
Not the toughest thing I've done, but definitely not as tough as assisting with a birth.
True.
But yeah, you know, mm-hmm. yeah, I just want people to feel like, you know, everybody's carrying trauma from this.
Yeah.
I mean, COVID's like one of the biggest traumas like our generation will hopefully ever experience.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, but like you're going to be carrying that trauma and like it's okay to be angry.
Mm-hmm.
It is okay to feel afraid. It is okay. You know, all those things are okay. But like, what is the next step? You have to also ask the question of like, okay, well, what do I do next?
Mm-hmm.
What is the best thing for me to do next? If I didn't have to think about,
mm-hmm.
you know, X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
What is the decision that you want to make for yourself? Like, regardless of what you see in social media or on TV or on Netflix or your parents are telling you, or, you know, what do you feel is the best thing to do?
Mm-hmm. And
it's difficult.
It really is. It can be very difficult to actually like go through with that feeling. Well, Lexa, this has been so wonderful. Thank you so much for chatting with me and sharing with our listeners. Do you want to plug any social media? Is there any other like resources you want to share?
I mean, you can follow me at Lexa Glade, mm-hmm. LexaGlade. I'm on Instagram. I try to put out, you know, interesting doula tidbits. And I follow a bunch of other really cool doulas too. And they're out there and we work in a large variety of capacities. I think social media is actually a really great place to find a local doula,
mm-hmm.
as a like little thing too, because we all have different voices and perspectives, but we all kind of come to the same like sacred space. So, yeah. I'll leave you that.
Lovely. Well, we'll definitely share that out. Thanks so much. It was really great chatting with you.
Yeah, likewise. Thanks for having me on.
And that's all for today's episode. If you have any questions or comments, you can email us at sitstilllookopinionated@gmail.com. And make sure to follow us on social media at sitstillpodcast. Please subscribe, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts. This podcast was produced by Michael Dritto and me, Claire Malky. And written by me, Claire Malky. Michael Dritto, Fee Bosanyavich's, Gabriel Skavor, Molly Smith, and Charlie Bain. Theme music by Terrence Jackson. Transition music by Christina Walter. And royalty-free music from Epidemic Sound. Check out our referral link in the show notes. If you would like to support this podcast, please subscribe to our newsletter at www.sitstillpodcast.com and visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/sitstillpodcast. This podcast was recorded on the land of the Kickapoo, Peoria, and Potawatomi Nations. And of course, I'm your host, Claire Malky. Oh, and don't forget, stay opinionated. Bye.